This is the show where we imagine hypothetical futures for India. Futures that could become a reality when science and tech try to solve problems within our uniquely Indian contexts. What would these scenarios look like? And should we even make them happen? That's what we'll talk about. Welcome to Imagined Tomorrow. I'm your host, Shreya. This season, I'm going to start with something that I've wondered about for a very long time. A question that's been explored extensively in pop culture, especially Hollywood movies. What if a big asteroid was heading towards us? This idea of being struck by something massive from outer space, something that can obliterate our cities and lives in a moment, that can be pretty powerful.
What hit us?
Small asteroid fragments
this morning.
We've seen this imagined over and over again in movies like Armageddon, Deep Impact, and most recently, Don't Look Up. But in most of these movies, India and this part of the world rarely feature in the story. If we do, we come and go in seconds, while the West saves the world. Or doesn't. So, in this episode, we'll explore a scenario we've rarely seen play out in movies. A possible incoming asteroid headed towards the Indian region, imagined from an Indian point of view. Before we do that, let's hear a piece of news from the future, from the year 2052.
The city of Nawabs, the city of chaos. That's what the city of Lucknow has become as we speak. A 15,000-ton asteroid exploded over Lucknow late last night. Experts are calling it the explosion of the century. In fact, this asteroid, which scientists have named Mani, after the famous film director Mani Ratnam, is the biggest in recent history to approach Earth. Initial reports by ISRO estimate that the asteroid was around the size of India Gate. We don't know yet how many lives are lost, but at least hundreds of people have been seriously injured. Traffic gridlock has worsened the confusion. As you can see in the visuals behind me, buildings and trees have been ripped apart. Dust clouds continue to gather above the city. There's glass and brick everywhere on the roads. The iconic Ghanta Ghar has been flattened. The Rumi Darwaza is no longer protecting old Lucknow. In fact, the impact of the blast was felt hundreds of kilometers away. Authorities are rushing to salvage what they can of the Taj Mahal. The situation is bad. Communication lines are down, there is no electricity, and hospitals are struggling. It seems unlike anything we have dealt with before. More details are yet to come. But there is only one question on everyone's mind. Why? Why were citizens not told money was coming? Why were citizens not evacuated? Are we not equipped to even know about what dangers might be coming from outer space?
This news was fictional. There's no money and no explosion over Lucknow. But what if there is an asteroid out there that could crash into us in the future? Something big and catastrophic. What if there is a don't look up scenario for the Indian region? So in this episode, we'll answer these three questions. How do we know if some object from outer space is coming our way? Has the Indian region been struck in the past? And if an asteroid does come hurtling towards us in the future, can we do something about it? Welcome back. This is the first question. How do we know if an asteroid is coming our way? Well, sometimes we don't find out. And I'll start with that. On the morning of February 15, 2013, residents of a town called Chelyabinsk in Russia woke up to a fireball streaking through the sky.
A blinding flash of light.
Then, there was a loud boom. It turned out that a broken bit of an asteroid or a meteor that was only about 20 meters in size had entered the Earth's atmosphere, then exploded 23 kilometers above the town. This explosion released as much energy as nearly 30 Hiroshima-like atomic bombs. Hundreds of tons of debris were released. Buildings shook. There was shattered glass all around. But there had been no warning. None at all.
1,000 people were injured from shards of flying glass and debris. Tonight here, we have learned there was no warning.
This lack of warning doesn't surprise many scientists.
As an astronomer, I knew that these things can happen.
That is Dr. Varun Bhalerao, a professor of astrophysics at IIT Bombay.
If you are living near a forest, okay, you know that there are some trees in the forest which are old and decayed, and someday they are going to fall. So when one of those trees falls, you are not ultra shocked by it because you know it was a matter of time. Some of them will not fall for a decade, some might fall tomorrow.
Similarly, the sky is massive and there are countless asteroids out there zooming about. So scientists are bound to miss some. But where are all these asteroids to begin with?
Asteroids, as we all get first introduced to them, are basically rocks in space. They can be tiny, pebble-sized things to what we now call dwarf planets, which could be thousands of kilometers in size.
These space rocks are basically everywhere.
As we first hear about these things in school, asteroid belt karke kuch hota hai, which is this region between Mars and Jupiter where you have all the asteroids. That's the conventional idea. That is largely true. A large fraction of asteroids are located there.
But there are also tons of asteroids farther away. There's a belt of asteroids beyond the orbit of Neptune, for example. Then there are asteroids in the same orbit as Jupiter. And when you have so many objects and planets flying past one another, gravity acting on each other, asteroids can go off course.
And you end up with orbits that can be chaotic. There are objects which will get thrown out of the solar system completely. There are others which will fall into inner orbits and so on. The final configuration we have does have rocks which are streaming past Earth.
These rocks streaming past Earth or coming close to Earth's orbit are called near-Earth objects. Most of the time when they do cross Earth's orbit though, Earth isn't there at all. But over the course of time, some of these asteroids can come dangerously close to our planet. These ones are then called potentially hazardous asteroids. And the way scientists find and track them is by looking at the sky through telescopes and taking pictures.
If we are looking at a star field and we are observing it, these asteroids are actually orbiting around the sun. So they will appear to move in my image. If I take a single long image, they will appear as a streak. If you don't take a long enough exposure, even if it doesn't move in a single image, what we often do is we go back to the same field in 10 minutes or 15 minutes, half an hour, and then take another image. And between those two images, this object will have moved.
Let's say you found a moving object in your telescope images. You've compared it against a database of known objects in space and there's no match. You suspect it could be an asteroid that's not been seen before. What happens next?
Imagine there's a mosquito in your room, okay, and you heard it buzz once or you saw it once. That's not enough, right? You want to know exactly where it is right now and then go and eliminate it. For an asteroid, looking at it and seeing it once is not enough. You want to be able to calculate its orbit so that you can predict where it will be at any point in the future.
And you need to be able to predict this so you can either confirm or eliminate the asteroid as a potential threat to Earth. So you need more pairs of eyes, more telescopes observing the sky from different parts of our planet. Dr. Varun's team at IIT Bombay, for instance, is part of an international project called GROTH, which stands for Global Relay of Observatories Watching Transients Happen. Yes, it's a mouthful. GROTH is basically a bunch of research institutes around the world watching the skies with their telescopes.
So what we do is we work with partner observatories like Zwicky Transient Facility in California. They are in the business of using wide field telescopes to do many things, one of which is to search for asteroids.
Let's say the California Observatory spots a possible asteroid. Dr. Varun's team then helps confirm that it is indeed one. And to do it, they use the GROTH India telescope, which is located in Hanle, Ladakh. This was built by IIT Bombay along with the Indian Institute of Astrophysics.
So people say that, hey, look, this object really has a poor orbit. We need good observations to verify that orbit and to update it. Information like this is shared on a public forum. So we pick targets from there and we take observations and we refine their orbit. And it helps to confirm that, yes, this was not something fluke that the California guys saw or something like that, right? So if we discover something, it's not called a discovery. It is not attributed to us until someone else independently confirms it.
There's another way Dr. Varun's team helps confirm asteroids.
The other part that we work on, which my group works on, but does not use the GROTH India telescope, is that we help inspect the raw data from the Zwicky Transient Facility to identify such asteroids.
That's because scientists are usually playing catch-up. There's almost always more objects caught on the telescope images than identified. So Dr. Varun's students often take up the task of looking through the Californian telescope images to see if something interesting was captured.
That works really nicely because it's daytime for us when it's nighttime in California. My students are up anyway because it's daytime. So they look at the data from the telescope and they identify if there are any asteroid candidates. And then we submit that again to the International Astronomical Union. If the asteroid needs further observations and is within the reach of Growth India telescope, we go and take data on that as well.
Within India, there are very few scientists like Dr. Varun who are watching the skies for dangerous asteroids. So if we want to know whether there's a potentially threatening asteroid headed towards the Indian region, we'll need help. Thankfully, there are many telescopes pointed towards the sky in North America, South America, Australia, and Europe.
So they're all over the place because it's always night somewhere, and you can track the sky depending upon where it is night.
This is Dr. Angela Stickle, a planetary scientist at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Maryland, USA.
So actually, Earth gets hit all the time. If you've ever seen a shooting star, that is something hitting the Earth. Usually those are small. They're like sand grains, things like that.
But these are usually harmless. For a long time, scientists have focused their telescopes on what they call the planet killers, asteroids that are bigger than 1 kilometer in size. Like the one that is thought to have started the end of dinosaurs. When the 10-kilometer wide asteroid hit Earth near Mexico 66 million years ago, it created a massive crater. What followed was utter chaos, earthquakes, mega tsunamis, wildfires, the sky covered by a cloud of dust and sulfates for a decade. This obliterated a lot of life on Earth. Scientists have been hard at work to find all possible planet killer asteroids out there. And so far, they estimate they've discovered more than 90% of them. None of these are expected to pay Earth a visit in the next century at least. But remember the meteor that exploded over Chelyabinsk? That was just about 20 meters in size, and it still caused considerable damage.
And so even that size, you know, 10 or 15 meters can be damaging, but they become really concerning when you start getting into things that are in the hundreds of meters, because those could potentially wipe out entire cities or regions if they were to hit the Earth. And so that's when we start to get really worried.
Which is why researchers are now also trying to find the smaller, modestly sized asteroids, those that are tens of meters to hundreds of meters in size, because these smaller ones can also be bad. We have one example from not too far back in the past. On the morning of June 30th, 1908, there was a massive blast over a remote Siberian forest. Scientists say that a 50 to 200 meter meteor zipped through the atmosphere, sending shockwaves that released as much energy as some 185 Hiroshima bombs. More than 80 million trees were flattened in seconds. This was named the Tunguska event, and it destroyed 2,000 square kilometers of forest in a flash. Thankfully, it did not pass over a city or a town. So far, however, we've only identified about 40% of possibly dangerous asteroids that are bigger than 140 meters. And we've barely scratched the surface for ones that are smaller. This is because larger asteroids are easier to spot than smaller ones.
Now, these things are not self-luminous. They are visible to us for the same reason that the moon or other planets are visible to us. They're reflecting sunlight. If you are a large asteroid, you reflect a lot of sunlight. If you are smaller, you reflect lesser sunlight, so you are fainter and that much harder to see. That is why it is easier for us to see the large asteroids and harder to see the small ones.
Sometimes the sun can also be a problem in spotting asteroids.
You can't look too close to the sun, for instance, because it will damage your telescope. And so objects that are coming out of the part of the sky where the sun is are difficult to see. And that was actually the case for the Chelyabinsk impactor, is that it was coming essentially in the same direction as the sun. And so we were effectively blinded by the sun.
In fact, scientists recently found three potentially hazardous asteroids that were previously blinded by sunlight. One of them is more than a kilometer in size, so it could potentially be a planet killer. But it's still millions of kilometers away, so it's not a threat to us, in this century at least. There's also the play of distance. Smaller asteroids become more visible when they come closer to Earth.
Again, this is an everyday experience. If you're looking at cars on a highway or water, further away the object is, the fainter it is. So what we can do is that we can't see smaller asteroids when they are, say, on the opposite side of the sun or something like that. But when they're relatively closer to Earth, we are in a position to see them. So that's how we've been discovering them.
Like in 2020, when Dr. Varun's students got a little bit famous when they tracked down an asteroid that passed really, really close to Earth, less than 3,000 kilometers away, which in space terms is uncomfortably close.
Yeah, that actually is a very fun story. It's full of drama. Kunal was a student of metallurgy and material sciences. Kriti was a mechanical engineering student.
It was only Kriti's second day on the job, and both she and Kunal had been going through images from the Californian observatory.
And both of them were sitting and scanning for these objects, and they flagged this particular object saying, hey, look, this looks like an asteroid.
People from other institutes also confirmed that it was indeed an asteroid.
And when we did the orbit calculations, it turns out that it really, really went past Earth, very close to Earth. And if I remember correctly, it was roughly a car-sized or a minivan-sized object. Had it hit Earth, it would have caused a big bang audibly and so on, but not a lot of destruction. Possibly not a lot of destruction.
But here's the thing. The images had captured the asteroid on its way out. Nobody had seen it on its way in towards Earth.
It was small, so we could not have seen it much further away. Okay, so there's a window of maybe 2, at most 3 days in which that object could have been visible to typical telescopes. Because it's small, right? Then why did we not see it on its way in when it is moving that fast? We don't cover the entire sky that fast. So it's very easy to miss. The global community does not have the resources to scan the sky for all of this. And this has been the premise of many sci-fi movies for a while, right? If you look at Armageddon kind of movies, At some point, of course, when it is too late, the president will ask the science advisor saying, why did we hear about this only now? And then some poor, meek scientist, because of course scientists have to look stupid in that. The scientist replies that your budget allows us to search barely 1% of the sky.
There are also newer problems, such as billionaires like Elon Musk packing up space with thousands of satellites.
Over 1,500 satellites.
You know, things like Starlink or other satellites. It can make it a little harder because what we're looking for is we're looking for objects that move, right? Like asteroids, but satellites also move. And so you get these kind of streaks in your images and they can make it harder to process your data. They can make it harder to find asteroids.
But when scientists do spot an asteroid and get observations from multiple telescopes, they can predict with a fair bit of accuracy what its orbit will be like.
Once we find objects, we're very good at tracking them. You know, once we know where they are, you can find them again in the sky and track them. Unfortunately, the sky is really big, right? And there are some limits to the number of telescopes that we have and where they can look.
And if that rock seems to be headed towards our planet, then researchers can predict, again, quite accurately, where it might land.
So there was an object that hit in the Sudan several years ago, which we had identified and found prior to impact. And they were able to predict where it would hit and at what time it would hit to within meters and seconds. So they can do it very accurately once it's found.
This happened in 2008. Using observations from 26 telescopes, scientists predicted that a small asteroid, a few meters in size, would enter the Earth's atmosphere above northern Sudan on October 7th, early morning. And on October 7th that year, at the time predicted, the asteroid did enter the atmosphere above northern Sudan and exploded with a bright flash. So, if scientists manage to find and track an asteroid headed towards India, they'll be able to say where it might explode or crash and when. But what happens after it hits us? More on this after a short break. Welcome back. The question we will now tackle is this. What happens if an asteroid hits us? What impacts can we expect? To find answers, I reached out to an expert who studies what happened when asteroids hit us in the past.
So far in India, we have 3 identified confirmed impact craters.
This is Dr. Dvijesh Ray. He's a planetary geologist at the Physical Research Laboratory in Ahmedabad. He studies what are called impact craters. These are craters or depressions that form when an asteroid comes crashing into a planet like Earth or other planets or moons. The region we call India has also seen its fair share of collisions many, many years back. And scientists like Dr. Dujesh have identified and confirmed at least three of them.
One is the Dhala craters. That is the oldest. The age actually is not determined yet. We can infer that the age would be between 2.5 and 1.7 billion years.
Dhala crater is located in Shivpuri district of Madhya Pradesh. It is about 11 kilometers wide, which makes it the largest crater in India.
Second oldest one is the Ramgarh structure. Again, the formation time is not well constrained, but based on the fossil, we can infer that the impact occurred during the mid-Jurassic time, that is around 65 million years.
The Ramgarh structure or crater is located in Rajasthan, about 100 kilometers from Kota, the IIT coaching hub. This crater is about 2.4 kilometers wide.
And the youngest impact crater is the Lonar crater in Maharashtra. So this is the smallest one. So diameter is around 1.8 kilometer. And here we have a very good age for the impact crater. So which is around 575,000 years.
There could be many other impact craters in the Indian region, he says. But these are still awaiting confirmation.
So these are three identified craters, but there are many probable candidates in India. For example, Shimlipal structure in Odisha, and there are offshore structures, Shiva structure in Mumbai, and one is the South India Tamil Nadu Kaveri structure, and another is the Luna structure in Kutch, Gujarat. So these are all the probable structures, but the confirmation yet to become. So more studies will be required to establish those as an impact crater.
One challenge in saying, yes, this is a crater created because of an asteroid impact is simply logistics.
I have named a few, like Shimlipal structure in Odisha. So this crater is basically in the forest area. It's a tiger reserve forest. So we have limited access there. So whatever exposure you will get, you have to study. So we can't go there and drill the structure and can get some impact melt sample. Shiva structure is offshore Mumbai. It is in the sea actually. So again, it's very difficult to get sample from sea. It is not going to be easy.
After all, craters can stretch for several kilometers. And over millions of years, the surface changes. Forests grow over them, cities get built, rivers change course, and rocks erode. So identifying craters on a constantly changing dynamic surface can be very hard. Another challenge is that craters don't always look like the craters you see in books or movies.
If you get a structure like Lonar, it's a classical example that you get a bowl-shaped structure. And okay, this could be a crater, but all the structure is not looks like Lonar.
But why study these craters at all?
Impact craters are basically windows into the past, present and future. And we can also infer a geologic history of planet by studying the impact crater.
For example, by studying the metals and materials in the crater, scientists can say what the approaching object might have been made up of, whether metals or clay and rock or mostly ice and dust. They can say when the impact took place. They can also say what the impact could have been like.
So the same impactor, when it hits on the sedimentary rock, like in Ramgarh, it produces around 2.4 kilometer diameter crater. We call it a complex crater. But when the same impactor hit on the crystalline rock, like basalt in the Lonar, the size could be different. There, they can produce the simple crater, not the complex one. So it depends on a lot of things. Size of the impactor, about the target properties of the rock, whether it's a crystalline, whether it's a sedimentary rock.
Knowing these things is very useful because it tells scientists what impacts those collisions might have had. Did it cause extinctions? Were there earthquakes and tsunamis? And if we can figure out what happened in the past, we can predict what might happen in the future if a similar-sized asteroid were to hit us. But that's not the only way we can learn about potential impacts.
I specialize in looking at how things break, essentially, so how things fracture.
That's Dr. Angela again. And one of her research focus is to simulate impacts, which means that she tests out what happens when different kinds of objects crash onto different surfaces of planets and moons.
And so we can change, you know, what we hit, what type of material. You can get sand or pumice or other types of rocks and look at the sort of fundamental processes that create an impact crater and how it modifies the surface of things so that when we see craters from space on other planets, we can then understand what happened in a bit more detail.
In fact, to know what an asteroid can do to a planet like ours, researchers like Dr. Angela need to know two main things: how big the object is and what it is made up of, whether rock or metal, for example. Once they know this, they run computer simulations.
And it tells us, will the asteroid make it through the atmosphere? If it does, how big of a crater will it make? How much energy will be deposited? Things like that. We can predict, not 100%, but pretty reliably, kind of what to expect. And the more we know about the asteroid ahead of time, the better our predictions will be.
Predictions that could be applied to the Indian region as well. Is there maybe a metal asteroid headed towards the city of Lucknow, like in our news from the future? Is there perhaps a big rocky asteroid threatening to land in the ocean close to Chennai? Through experiments and simulations like the ones that Dr. Angela and others do, we can figure out what kinds of impacts we could expect. Whether complete city annihilation, a shockwave through the atmosphere that shatters all the glass in a city, an earthquake that reduces buildings to rubble, or maybe a tsunami. All of this is hypothetical, of course. Scientists are not overly worried about a catastrophic asteroid impact in our lifetime, at least.
Not really, no. Not any more than I worry about the chance of, say, a shark attack. I actually worry a lot more about being bitten by a dog.
That's Dr. Varun of IIT Bombay again.
And the reason is that these are just that rare. This is a black swan event. It is ultra rare, but the impact is so high, no pun intended, that we really have to be very, very careful about it. We can't afford to be lax about it at all, because it could just end everything. If a large rock hits us, we are gone. There's no doubt about that.
Which is why, despite asteroid impacts being rare, a few countries have been working up plans to stop asteroids from hitting us. More on that after a short break. Welcome back. Our last question is this. If an asteroid decides to come hurtling towards us in the future, can we do something about it? There's no plan in India, at least none that I could find out about. But agencies like NASA, the European Space Agency, and even the China National Space Administration have been trying to come up with ways to stop killer asteroids. For example, NASA, who Dr. Angela collaborates with, has established the Planetary Defense Coordination Office. This office wants to detect potentially hazardous objects in advance and then prevent them from destroying us.
I think the Chelyabinsk impact was really kind of an event that really surprised some people, and other people, you know, kind of used it as a rallying cry, as this is an important thing. And so it's an international effort, and NASA has set up this office to kind of coordinate the U.S. part of that effort.
There are several asteroid defense strategies being tried out, but I'll talk about the one that is already in motion. It's called the DART mission, or the Double Asteroid Redirection Test mission.
It is a spacecraft mission that's designed to impact an asteroid to test technology to see if we can deflect it, just in case we need it in the future.
This was the mission's plan. Send a spacecraft into an asteroid called Dimorphos that's about 160 meters in diameter. This asteroid orbits another asteroid called Didymos. Neither rocks pose any threat to Earth, which makes them good test subjects.
Yes, so we launched in November out of Vandenberg Space for Space, just before American Thanksgiving. And we are currently in space headed towards Didymos. We will be impacting into Dimorphos on September 26th at about 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Eastern Daylight Time.
When I spoke to Dr. Angela, the spacecraft was still heading towards Dimorphos. But just as they had calculated, on September 26th, 2022, at 7:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the DART spacecraft crashed into its target. Researchers are now monitoring how the impact has changed the asteroid's orbit. But remember, the spacecraft flew for 10 months, covering millions of kilometers before impacting Dimorphos. So how much advance notice would we need for a future mission like this if we detected an actual asteroid that's dangerous?
That's a really good question. So building a spacecraft, it takes time. And there's a couple of things that could limit how fast you could get something off the ground. One of those is the availability of a launch vehicle, right? We don't just have rockets sitting on launch pads waiting. So if there was a launch vehicle ready, you know, they could use it. And the other thing is just building up the spacecraft. You know, DART has taken about 5 years to design and build, which is a pretty standard time for a spacecraft.
But if DART works, things might be easier and faster the next time, if a next time comes.
But it would still take a couple of years, probably, to build a dedicated spacecraft to go. So we would need at least a few years warning. And then it also depends on how far away the object is. Ideally, if you want to deflect something, you want to deflect it when it's really far from Earth, right? Way before it's even a concern. And so that can take a couple of years for the spacecraft to get there. You know, Mars takes a year to get to, and Jupiter can take 10. And so it, depending on where the asteroid is, will tell you how much time you need.
Let's say a 50-meter asteroid was headed towards Agra in the future. That could also potentially be dangerous. But could a mission like DART deflect that?
You could. Things that are about 50 meters in size, we probably wouldn't, depending on, you know, other things. One of the mitigation options is to evacuate people, right? If we know where it's going to hit, we can evacuate people and save things. And the reason for that is small things, if you try to deflect them, you run the risk of actually disrupting them, so breaking them up into different pieces. And that's a process we don't fully understand exactly what would happen. So then you run the risk of, instead of one object, you have many objects, and we don't want that sort of scenario.
Smaller asteroids will also be a lot harder to aim and hit.
Right, these things are traveling at tens and 15s of kilometers per second. And so I think for those ones, we would not necessarily deflect. But when you start getting into the 100 meters, that's when it starts to become much more dangerous for it to hit the Earth. And so we would probably, if we could, do our best to get a mission to deflect those.
At the moment, there's no immediate threat from a killer asteroid. There are some potentially dangerous rocks out there, but scientists think that we are safe from them for a few generations at least.
You know, we found all the huge ones. We found all the world killers. We found all the region killers, we think. Little ones, you know, it's very rare that anything big enough to be that much of a worry hits us. So I think we're pretty okay.
But this show is about our future. And if there are threats that could become a danger for our future generations, perhaps it makes sense for India to also watch the skies and do everything we can to not be surprised by a sudden killer one day. Imagined Tomorrow is created and hosted by me, Shreya Dasgupta. Theme music, sound design, mixing and editing by Abhijit Shailanath, who was also the voice of the fictional news anchor, by the way.
Why?
Thanks to Dr. Varun Bhalerao, Dr. Angela Stickle, Dr. Dvijesh Ray and Dr. Abhijit Borkar for sharing their time and knowledge with us. The fictional bit was co-written by Nihira Ram. We were also helped by Porni Ray, Parvati Nair and Abhishek Madan. If you liked the episode, do share it with your friends and family and give us a shout out on social media. Also, follow us on your favorite podcast app to stay updated on new episodes. Our email is imaginedtomorrow@gmail.com. You can also say hi to me on Twitter @ Shreya Dasgupta. That's it for today. See you soon.